Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that's willing to remind you that Joe Musgrove is from San Diego. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. We're the Cespedes Family Barbecue. Jordan, he's from here. And
wait,
he plays for the team.
Wait, what? Like, so he like grew up a fan and now he's on the Padres? That's,
yep.
That doesn't seem real. I don't believe
it. No, it's real.
Wow, such courage to share that with everybody. Very excited to be joining you, Jake. Now, you are able to give us that insight and expertise as you're coming to us from San Diego, California, where you will be covering the Phillies and Padres. Game one tonight as we record this on Tuesday morning. We were hoping that we were going to be able to do both LCS previews today. However, the rain did not cooperate in New York. Jake fled to sunny San Diego and cannot give us the Bronx weather report as he normally can.
So I got here yesterday and a number of media people were like, why are you here? Wouldn't you rather be covering game five at Yankee Stadium than the workout day at Petco Park? And I said to them, it's called a weather report. it's called reading the room.
And also, still probably rather San Diego.
Yeah.
So yes, I think you made the right call there. So we still will have game five, hopefully this afternoon. Finally, that feels like the series has been going on for 5 weeks. But the point is that this episode is going to focus on the NLCS between the Phillies and the Padres. And let's start with the very obvious thing. We're going to break this into two parts. The first part before the break, we're going to talk about the baseball, strictly baseball, who's going to win this damn series. And then we're just going to talk about all the storylines and all the things we're thinking about that kind of permeate throughout this Phillies-Padres matchup. But let's start with the obvious. One of these teams is going to the World Series. And that is a very exciting and cool and weird thing to imagine. And kind of jumping off of what I said on last episode about how exciting it is to watch the defending champion lose, to think about either of these teams in the World Series is so freaking cool. Not even just winning it, just in it is very, very fun to think about.
It's very funny too, right? Because you always gear up if there's an upset in the NL or ALCS. Like, or leading into it, where it's like the one juggernaut and the underdog team. Like, even last year, it was like the Astros were the juggernaut, and like the Red Sox were like scrappy and fine, and they ended up losing, right? So you end up with Astros in the World Series, and it's like, okay, well, we've seen this before, whatever. This is going to be something that we really can't imagine. Mm-hmm. I am so excited for it. It reminds me of the Royals-Orioles ALCS from 2014. Where it was like, mm-hmm. Oh, wow, what are these teams is going to be in the World Series?
Right, because, of course, that was, you know, before the Royals, it was like, oh, shit, they're really legit. So, no, that is probably the best comp. Of course, good amount more star power here. I guess Manny Machado was involved in both. But beyond that, it is a hell of a matchup. And I got to say too, before we start getting into kind of breaking down, you know, who's going to win here. Like, there's part of me that's like, man, I know it's been a long time for the Phillies, but think about for us growing up in DC, what the Phillies were to us, right? We used to hate them. We used to, because they were so good. They were so dominant. And it wasn't even because we were Nats fans. It was just because we were close enough to Philly to just be like, oh, God. And like, we didn't like Chase Utley. You know, we didn't like that. We were not excited to watch. Like, and we respected the pitching and whatever, but it was like, oh, God, the Phillies. And so there is part of me that now that we have all these people in the Phillies that we adore, it is a little bit strange. But I guess, you know, you grow up and you kind of get over those things. And now here I am wearing a Williamsport Crosscutters hat in support of all the Phillies who used to play in Williamsport.
A running bit that we did on the show was we like and treat all 29 teams equally. Fuck the Phillies.
Yes. Like that was how obnoxious they had become because they were so good for that 5-year stretch, but they earned it.
And I think
we
knew enough people in our lives because when you're growing up in DC, like there are Philly people scattered throughout your middle school class. Right. Mm-hmm. And they were annoying about it. And mm-hmm. we didn't have teams that were good. And it was like, shut up. about Shane Victorino in English class, or I'm gonna give you a noogie. You know what I mean?
And David Akers, right? I mean, it was really just that combination.
It was the worst of times, Jordan. But you're right; they have earned our respect.
They've earned our respect. They went through some low years, and now they've come out the other side with a bunch of players that we undeniably appreciate and love, some of which, of course, we like personally. So that's the Phillies. Then you have the Padres, who have also had their fair share of lean years, and AJ Preller has built this bizarro mercenary juggernaut of a roster that took down the Dodgers and are now one step away from finally getting to the place that AJ Preller has been making all these transactions to get to. So let's get to it, Jake. Let's start comparing these two squads. Which side would you like to start with?
Let's start with the Philadelphia Phillies. Going around the infield, behind the dish, JT Realmuto. Anything to say about JT Realmuto, Jordan?
Well, it's the one defensive edge the Phillies have on the entire diamond, and it is a big one. I mean, he is still probably the best catcher in the world. I think he's kind of showed us that over the last couple months. And he's amazing. And that inside the park home run was an iconic moment, even if it involved some questionable outfield decisions.
It was a super funky moment, yes. But he's like the only catcher in baseball who could have pulled it off, both to hit that ball where he hit the ball and run that fast around the bases.
Dalton Varsho. It's a two-man club.
But it is
a short group.
The idea of like Cal Raleigh, who is a very good catcher, doing that is inconceivable.
Yes.
Right? Of running that fast. And so it did make me appreciate Realmuto while he was doing his magical trip around the bases. All right, first base is Rhys Hoskins. Rhys Hoskins, we talked about this in the last show. He is a buddy. We like him. We cannot cover him objectively. It is impossible. The one Rhys Hoskins thing I will share quickly is that Rhys's wife was at a wedding for her sister in Italy and missed the entire NLDS.
So she wasn't even watching the Mad Spike Live or anything?
She was not there. She was not in person because it's like it's her sister's wedding. Like she's got to go to her sister's wedding, right? But
did the sister's wedding have to be in Italy?
I mean, I can't speak to that. There's a photo of like the whole wedding party on these like very beautiful like Italian rustic steps watching the Phillies game on an iPhone in the middle of the night.
I love that so much. Here's the thing that I'm thinking about for Rhys for this series. If we zoom back to 2017 when the Phillies sucked ass and Rhys came up and hit a million homers, first couple home runs were in San Diego in his fifth game. When he went on that tear in August of 2017, his first two homers, then he hit another one the next day, were in San Diego. And I just remember that super well because it was like, oh, hey, there's our friend in the big leagues. Oh, my God, he's hitting a home run every single day. So that is another thing I'm thinking about is he will play game one at Petco Park. So that's cool.
Second base, Gene Segura, who was the longest. He had the most games played without a postseason appearance before the series began. And he has very much taken advantage of it. He was one of the best hitters for the Phillies in the last series. He went 6-for-13 with two doubles. He's scrappy at the bottom of the order. He's very emotive. He jumped over the railing when Rhys hit the home run, and his shoulders go straight down. If you ever really look at Gene Segura, look at the angle of his shoulders. It's very odd.
He's a very strange shaped dude, but having him bat eighth is kind of shows the depth of this lineup. It's awesome. And by the way, just bonus fun fact, because I haven't tweeted this out. Do you know who the new title holder is for most games played as a position player without a postseason appearance? It's kind of a sad answer. Semi-related to the Phillies, sort of.
Semi-related to the Phillies.
I mean, so you're not someone who's on I'll the give Phillies. You 5 seconds. He was on the Phillies, yeah. He was on the Phillies for the longest time. He's still active, but you know, hanging on to a roster spot.
Who?
Mikel Franco. I believe is the guy with the most games among position players to not play in the postseason once. So there you go. Brutal. Anyway, go Phillies.
Shortstop, Bryson Stott, young goofball. Love this guy from Vegas. Bryce Harper was like his babysitter. Not actually, but Bryce, I think it's.
He's known as
Bryson Stott's. Yeah, they've been friends forever. Bryson Stott's mom, I think, was like Harper's someone's cheerleading coach in high school or something like that.
Yeah, they have connections going way back.
I love that he's literally named Bryson, and it's Bryce's son and Bryce.
Yeah, it is extremely appropriate. And he had one huge hit, of course, in the DS. Pretty cold otherwise, but what a rookie season. I know the overall numbers don't look great, but he's been only getting better in the second
and
half.
He's very solid defensively for a team that, you might not remember this, friends, employed Didi Gregorius at shortstop for the majority of this season. Okay.
He'll get a ring.
And he'll get a ring, and he was like the worst defensive shortstop ever. Third base, Alec Bohm.
He was an even worse hitter than he was at defense, which is correct. why he's not there anymore.
Third base, Alec Bohm. He's so tall. Like, he gets taller every time I see him. He's, you know, like when you see a little kid and you're like, wow, you're taller. That's what I feel about Alec Bohm.
Yeah.
He's super streaky. He doesn't really hit the ball in the air enough, but he hits for average, usually. He just kind of needs to get rolling. Defensively, he's been better in the postseason. He was really good in the Cardinals series, had one throwing error, I believe, against the Braves. All right, moving to the outfield. Left field, Kyle Schwarber. Colder than the underside of the walk-in freezer.
I mean, this is how he, it's not like we're surprised, right? Schwarber, you look at Schwarber's whole season and he hit whatever 46 home runs. It's just insane hot streaks and insane cold streaks. This is kind of how it works. And the fact that they're able to win the series in four games without him doing really a whole lot is pretty impressive, because he's looking lost up there.
Looking lost and still leading off. In center field is Wet King Brandon Marsh, the wettest player this side of the Mississippi. He's wetter than the Mississippi itself. Dealt to the Phillies at the deadline for their top hitting prospect, Logan Ohapi. Marsh, you probably recognize him because he looks like he's been stranded on a desert island for the last 10 years.
Would it guess we see Matt Vierling get the start, probably against a lefty like Blake Snell. But yes, Marsh is certainly the name to watch, and obviously someone they've invested in pretty heavily here.
In right field, Nick Castellanos, who was awful all year, and because his defense is big poo-poo, it was even worse. Right? When Trent Grisham was awful, he can at least go get it in center.
Yes.
Nick Castellanos, the only place he could go get it is the couch when he's in the outfield. Although he made a great play, he works hard be a defender.
He does. That's the thing. There are some bad defenders who just suck and accept that they suck and don't try. And then there's bad defenders. The Phillies have a couple of them, right? Reese works his ass off and he's just not very good at first base. That's just what happens, right? Same with Castellanos. So
that's
anyway,
kind of how I feel about me in speaking Spanish.
Like, I work your ass off, still sucking.
I've tried so many times. You know, I got a lifetime subscription to Rosetta Stone that I bought a couple years ago. Okay, I took night classes in New York City. All right, I moved to the Dominican Republic for 4 months, and it's still no bueno, Jordan. That means not good. Their designated hitter is Bryce Harper, who's Bryson Stott's dad. Let's not even talk about Bryce Harper. You know the deal. Like,
and we'll talk. We're going to talk about it more in relation to Machado later. So we'll save it.
Great. That's the starting lineup. For the
amazing
Phillies.
So
we'll get to the pitching in a second. Let's hop on over to the San Diego father figures. Jordan, behind the dish, Austin Nola, who, I don't know if you heard about this, his brother Aaron, okay, is also a big leaguer.
Wait, oh, can you imagine having two kids in the big leagues? I mean, that
I
is
can't
just,
imagine that is just having any kids
doing anything anywhere.
I don't have any children, let alone ones in the big leagues.
Imagine Austin, having kids.
I can't. I can't imagine having kids. Not right now. Not in this San Diego hotel room when I have to cover the NLCS.
Yeah, no shot. No shot. Okay, so yes, Austin Nola, Aaron Nola, we'll get to them later. Okay, who's at first base?
First base, Brandon Drury / Josh Bell, not really, / Will Myers. It is a bizarre group.
It's been mostly Myers. Yeah.
Mostly Myers. Yeah. Mostly Myers. Drury's mostly been DHing because Bell has fallen off a ravine. The idea that Myers is just the first baseman for the San Diego Padres in the year of our Lord 2022 is so funny. This guy, he is so talented. Yeah. Maybe this is just his vibe. He just gives off this vibe that he just refuses to apply himself. You know what I mean? Like, he just looks like the kid in high school who's super smart and, like, just read the book.
But to me, like I agree with that. But to me, the view of him, the scene of him buying shots, the whole bar, which has been pointed out, like the Padres really, I'm not blaming them, right? They really celebrated the DS like they won the World Series, which I don't
blame them
at
all. We're going to get to that.
Right? We'll get to that later. But for Will Myers in particular, it relates to the conversation we had in the last episode, which is that AJ Preller has spent, since he signed him, years trying to trade Eric Hosmer. And in the same way, he's also spent years trying to trade Will Myers. And Will Myers survived. And Will Myers is now playing. And now Will Myers gets to go to the NLCS and maybe the World Series with the Padres as the longest tenured Padre. So amazing. He did it. He's loving life.
Second base is Jake Cronenworth, who represents the biggest L for the Tampa Bay Rays of like the last 5 years. Dealt to San Diego when he was on the cusp of the big leagues. And the Crone Zone is legit. He is one of my favorite players in baseball because he's good at everything and exceptional at nothing except for defense at second base, which is being an exceptional defender at second base. You might not be an exceptional defender, like in general. That's a debate we can
have. Right, right. That is an interesting philosophical discussion, but it is true. And again, it's not just that, you know, good teams give up good players all the time. It's just that he's like the most raised guy ever. And they were just like, nah. So it's weird, but he's great.
He's incredibly fun to watch. And thing to know about him, he was a pitcher in college too. Mm-hmm. If he wanted to, he could probably throw like 95 off the mound.
Yes.
At shortstop is Ha Sung Kim, who has had quite the postseason just from an entertainment perspective. This dude is electric to watch. Now, is he as electric as the man he replaced, Fernando Tatis Jr.? No. There are power plants with less electricity than Fernando. But Ha Sung Kim is a worthy person to fill some of the most bizarre shoes I've ever seen. And the whole thing is great.
Yeah. No, we love Ha Sung Kim. He has been, I mean, I'm looking at his DS line, right? 3-for-18 with 7 strikeouts, but 2 doubles and, you know, great defense and everything. And runs the bases great. Like, he is just a super fun player. And yeah, I mean, there are a lot of teams that would have been in way worse situations when you lose a guy like Fernando Tatis, and Ha Sung Kim has been everything they could really ask for.
Third base, Manny Machado. We'll talk about him later. Left field, Jurickson Profar, who might tickle the mind and the memory of a longtime baseball nerd. I think in our life, in our fandom, Jordan, Profar represents something very important. Because this man was once the number one overall prospect in baseball. He was the Soto, the Tatis, the Acuna. This was the guy. Like, he was the dude, the can't-miss number one dude coming up with the Rangers. And for you and I, when we were in high school, this is how I knew that you and I were going to be friends talking about baseball, because you knew who Jurickson Profar was.
Right? That was it. That was the separator. I mean, the real comp, right, is Wander Franco, if we're going just like play style, right? He was that before him, makes his debut in Cleveland at age 19. I remember that game super well. Homers in his first at-bat, or at least definitely first game. And yeah, I mean, you know, we've kind of reflected on the fact that Bryce Harper just turned 30, but Jurickson Profar is turning 30 in February. That is like, as we've watched him since he was literally in the Little League World Series, that is very strange. And most notably for this team, AJ Preller's first love. So there's a reason that he has kept him around as long as possible.
And he's been had a good season.
He's been leading
off. He's been particularly good in the postseason. Center field, Trent Grisham. Awful hitting-wise during the regular season. Electrically good since in October. I believe he has 3 home runs so far in the postseason. His home run in game 2. Against the Dodgers, game 3 against the Dodgers was the difference. They won 2-1. And my takeaway from watching him in person during the 3 games at Citi Field, he is so good in center defensively.
Yeah.
And he is so good in center in a way that doesn't translate on TV well, because his jumps are unreal. And you don't get to see that on TV. He gets to balls because his jumps are so good that other guys don't get to, and so he doesn't have to dive for them, mm-hmm. particularly when coming in on the baseball. Mm-hmm. He's elite. And so
also, like,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, while his offense was bad this season. If you look at him, like he is still built. Like when you look at him, you remember why he is almost a, you can't call him a five tool because he's hitting 193, but like there is offensive impact in that body when he is right. It's just when it's wrong, it's obviously a mess, but to see what he's been able to do and have these three huge homers, it's not just a Kevin Kiermaier in center, you know? Like the fact that he can go get it and also have an offensive impact when he's right is, that's why people thought he was going to be a superstar. It is why.
And it's particularly cool for him because the single worst moment of his professional career, right, was the wild card game in 2019. He was with the Brewers. Soto hits that ball. It gets by him. It trickles away. The Nats win. That's about as bad of a flub as you can really have, right, in defensively in a postseason game. Every time for the last 2 months of the year that this guy looked to his left, he saw the man semi-responsible for the worst moment of his professional life, who we're going to talk about in a second, Juan Soto. And that would get to me. I'm sure as a professional baseball player, it does not get to Trent Grisham. But it would get to me and it would probably get to you. And I love that he has had this October redemption because before this year, if I said Trent Grisham to most casual fans, they would be like the guy who made the error on the Juan Soto play. And now it's the guy who won the wild card round for the Padres. And that's cool.
Yeah, it's also, yeah, and that was such an interesting trade too with the Brewers. And so that's one that we've kind of already relitigated when Luis Arias was looking really good. But now it's like, oh, well, actually, you know, and Eric Lauer too. So, but the point is he's doing it for him now and that is what they need. Okay, who's playing right field? What's this guy's name?
Juan Soto. Juan Soto is on the Padres. That's it. DH Josh Bell / Brandon Drury. Josh Bell came along with Juan Soto in that deal. And they were like, oh, we'll take Josh Bell instead of Luke Voit. Maybe you made the wrong call there.
Listen, if you're just going off of stats, Bell was arguably the second best hitter available from the first half. Like, that's just a fact.
Sure.
But boy, he hasn't looked like it. Yeah, no, I agree.
This has happened with Bell before where he's incredible in the first half and falls off a cliff to the point that he's just not starting. I don't think he started 2, 3, or 4 of the NLDS. They went with Drury instead. That's pretty significant. You know, he can provide a lot of juice off the bench, but who knows? All right, Jordan.
Hey, he hit that homer off Scherzer, so, you know. He did give him that. That was pretty
sick. They did start the whole thing. That was the first moment in the first inning of game one of the first game. Pitching. Let's do the pitching matchups.
Let's do it.
All right. Game one, Wheeler Darvish. Darvish has been the best version of himself over the last couple months. I maintain a level of skepticism in regards to you, Darvish.
Are you okay? But do you have, I'm jumping ahead here. Do you have more faith in him or Snell?
Oh, Darvish.
Okay.
I have more faith in God than Snell.
Okay. Okay. Why are you skeptical of Darvish?
He gives them up, man. He just gives him up. He gives up bombs. And if he does it with no one on base, it's fine. But the way that he pitched against the Dodgers, I know he only limited them to 3. But he's just a high wire act to me. And I understand that he's been better this year. But we've seen him be so bad recently. He's had such a tumultuous last couple years. I believe he's a good pitcher, yeah. I just think he's a 3 to 4 earned runs over a start. Not a 0-1. I think the Mets just did it themselves. I think the Mets really just lost that game. He's not bad. I'm not saying he's bad.
But yeah, I'm kind of in between, and this is a good time to just flip it more to the Phillies, right? Because the matchups that we have, you know, we're talking about Nola and Wheeler, who have just been so good that we have so much confidence in them that we end up kind of feeling worse about Snell and Darvish just be in comparison, you know. So it's going to be Wheeler Darvish, it's going to be Nola Snell, Ranger Suarez Musgrove. That's probably where it tips more in San Diego's favor for sure. But I can see what you're, when you're looking at them side by side, I can see why you might feel better about the Phillies guys.
Wheeler Nola is automatic. Mm-hmm. Those dudes right now are automatic, especially Nola. When Nola's locked in,
His delivery is so interesting. Like, it feels sort of disjointed. Like, it's not like he's clearly a good athlete, but it's not as silky smooth. Like, there's some level of herky jerky, but I mean, it's worked for him for 10 years, so I'm not questioning it. But yeah, he's been amazing, and I have more faith in him than Wheeler for sure, because Wheeler too, you know, still hasn't fully all the way worked all the way back. Although at this point, you have to imagine he's a full go. It's not that he's looked limited, but still, you know, he hasn't been on a heater the way that Noel has.
Yeah, I mean, he was great in game two. When they lost, they just lost. Remember, there was the Reese play, and then he kind of lost in the sixth. Like, Wheeler is a guy. There's a reason they paid him. And it's cool that he ended up here. Him and Syndergaard are now just on the Phillies together, which is hilarious. Game two, Nola Snell. True. We just talked about Nola. We've talked a lot about Snell. He's just exhausting to watch. Love your family the way he loves a 3-2 count and a fastball. Like, non-competitive pitches when he's ahead in the count. Just when I was in college, a big stress point from our coach was, if you're up in the count, on the mound, 1-2, 0-2, whatever, and you want to throw a ball, you want to think about moving the hands, right? The idea is that you're getting the hitter to do something, to react to the pitch, to think about swinging, and that changes their perception of whatever pitch is coming next. And there are a lot of times on an 0-2, 1-2 count where Blake Snell does not move the hands. He just throws a ball freaking nowhere. And it doesn't do anything. Now, his stuff is better than mine by a little bit.
Yeah, oh yeah. So that allows better than 99% of left-handers on earth, yes.
And so that allows him to work with, you know, a bigger margin of error, but it doesn't make it fun to watch.
Yeah, but he's still very good. Now, game three, Musgrove, clear edge. Suarez kind of got bailed out by the Phillies offense, of course, playing so well, but he can't be wonking five dudes again. That's not gonna work in this round. So he's gonna have to clean that up. And look, he's had a good season. That we've seen Ranger Suarez be very good. It's not impossible, but I think that the edge is clearly there for Musgrove. Although, of course, you know, that'll be back in Philadelphia, and so that is, you know, it maybe evens it out a little bit. Let's talk about game four.
Wow, that's cool, because Musgrove is from San Diego, and Ranger Suarez, I think he's from Philly.
That's true. Right, exactly. You nailed it. Game four is where things get interesting. We don't know now. We don't even have the rosters yet as we're you know, recording this. But if you had to guess right now who is starting game four for both teams, what would you say?
I would say Noah Syndergaard, Sean Manaea. That would be my guess.
I think so, too.
Clevinger was just so non-competitive in his game, whatever, outing against the Dodgers. Like, game one, I guess. It was pointless, right?
Yeah.
It was pointless. And Manaea at least will give you a little bit of bulk.
Because, again, the overall numbers, you might think it's similar, but Manaea, I've just seen have way better starts than basically anything Clevinger has done this season. So maybe they decide matchups-wise. Look, Kyle Gibson is still around there if they want more length. Depending on how taxed the bullpen is, I feel like it's more likely Gibson can give them five than Syndergaard. But also,
Bailey
Gibson
Falter and his bizarre release point extension.
Exactly, right? If they want to go lefties.
But
again,
they gave Syndergaard the start in the clincher in game four of the DS, and he did it. Like, he did his job, and he delivered.
It was three innings, but he was fine. He was fine. It's true. But yeah, so that's obviously going to be a pretty important pivot point. But the first two games is where we're paying attention.
We don't offer gambling advice here on Baseball Barbacast, but game four, bet the over.
Yeah, just do that right now. It seems like pretty safe, especially in Philly. All right, bullpens quickly, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll do our storylines. Have to give the edge to San Diego here. This version of Hader has been just completely, I mean, this is one of the best versions of Hader we've seen, and that's really saying something. What Robert Suarez has been able to do has been eye-opening. Don't sleep on Luis Garcia, who's also throwing 100 miles an hour has been amazing. You have guys like Steven Wilson and Tim Hill for matchups. Pierce Johnson, Morahone, not as much, but this is still a pretty strong group, especially at the back end right now. Now, the Philly bullpen showed up and we were not able to laugh at them in the same way. However, if we're comparing them, I still feel way better about the Padres. Like, if we're drafting relievers, I think, actually, yeah, if we were drafting relievers, who would you take first of all the bullpen guys?
Suarez and then Hader.
Suarez and Hader. I think Sir Anthony is right there too. If we're comparing both of them, but then you're taking more of the Padres guys.
Suarez can just give you a little more length, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, he could work too. Hader doesn't do that anymore. The Phillies as a team from 2019 through 2022 rank 5th in baseball league-wide in bullpen ERA. Now, that timeline is significant because that's Bryce Harper era. So they trying to start compete in 2019. Over that span, they have had the 5th worst bullpen ERA. I believe they are behind the Nats, who besides 2019 have been abysmal. The Orioles, who have been abysmal. I mean,
even 2019, it was like two guys. Right.
The Orioles bullpen, who before this year was horrible. The Pirates, who before this year have been horrible. Well, they've just been
bad. Yep.
And the Rockies, who play on the moon. And then the Phillies, who have been trying to win the whole time. Their bullpen has been so bad. Not just meh, bad.
And they've spent money on it, right? They spent, listen, it's not like this year has been perfect. They gave Jurys Familia a bunch of money, and he was terrible. You know, like, they've had things not work for them, too.
The fact that they have been competent, not dominant, competent in this postseason is a huge win. Huge win. Huge. And they haven't had to pitch in the same type of situations as the Padres bullpen has because the Phillies offense has given enough of a buffer. They weren't dominant, right? Like, they gave up a couple solo shots, and it was more just bending, not breaking, holding on to bigger leads and not capitulating, and they did that for the most part, right? Mm-hmm. Game one against the Braves, I think, was the one game where they really struggled and the Braves came back and Eflin held on for dear life, but they've gotten the job done. Now, in a matchup, I would take the Padres bullpen over them. Yeah. Jose Alvarado still gives me agita, even though I know he's good. And then Robertson.
I'm mostly sold that he's. I still have more faith in him than just because stuff wise he's just so far ahead of Eflin and Brogdon and even Brad Hand and Bilotti. So yeah.
Alvarado is also having a great time. David Robertson is on this team, which is funny. He will be back.
He will be back? Do we know he'll be back?
He looked good yesterday. I was there. I saw him running around, sweating it out. He hurt his calf celebrating the Bryce Harper home run in Philly, but I think he's going to be okay.
Okay.
It looks like he'll be on the roster.
Got it. Okay. Give the Padres the edge there. Anything else just strictly baseball before we move on and take a quick break?
Managers don't matter. Mm. I think both of these guys have been good managing their pens in October and getting guys in the right spots. I do think that Schwarber Hoskins hitting 1-2 is a little silly right now because of how bad they've both been generally. That doesn't really matter a whole lot. And it's not like there's an obvious candidate. Maybe you move Segura up there, right? But that's not the biggest deal in the world. Melvin is a good manager who turned this circus into a real baseball team. Tactically, he's been good, except for letting Adrian Morejon out to dry in game 2 in Citi Field. Anything else on the managers?
Melvin will be, it's a nice little contrast. No one knew. Rob Thomson had a great quote where he was like, yeah, I went to the Eagles game and no one knew who I was 2 months ago, and now everybody knows who I am, and that's weird. It's like, yep, that is definitely how managers work, especially in contexts like these. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with some more things we're thinking about in this NLCS.
San Francisco, where's your disco? This is Scott Braun from Baseball Legends Lounge, a SiriusXM podcast downloaded today to hear our in-depth conversation with Giants legend Will Clark.
And I turned and Chili Davis was on my left-hand side. He was one of my veterans. And I go, Chili, he's going to drill me next time up. He goes, oh, hell yeah.
Download Baseball Legends Lounge right now on the SXM app, included with all of our trials and popular plans, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman, back in your ears here on Baseball Barbacast. Jordan.
What's up?
We just broke down the baseball. And now we're going to break down the storylines because we love a good story. I watched a great movie yesterday. Shouts out to Marcel with the shell. Marcel the shell with shoes on. Great film. Jenny Slate paid for that ad.
With shoes on.
With shoes on. He had shoes okay. on. Thanks, don't. Jenny Do you? Slate. Do you have shoes on?
Not right now. No, I don't.
Let's talk about the storylines. There are many. The narratives are rich like a bone broth. And we're going to run through them all and begin at the top of the 2009 draft. 2010 draft with Bryce Harper and Manny Machado.
And Christian Colon and Barrett Laux and Matt Harvey. Just kidding. Bryce Harper, number one. Manny Machado, number three. Jameson Taillon, number two. Doesn't seem like he's going to be starting this game anymore now that Nestor Cortes is ready. But the point is that Manny Machado and Bryce Harper have been linked for a long time. They were two of the best high school prospects anyone has ever seen. There have been a lot of best high school prospects anyone has ever seen. And a lot of them suck. A lot of them do not end up being very good. Or a lot of them are fine. Or a lot of them are really good and often injured. But Bryce Harper and Manny Machado have basically been everything you could possibly hope for in Major League Baseball players for almost the entire time. And that is an incredible achievement for both of them. Drafted by the Beltway, the terrible Beltway squads, the Orioles and Nationals, now playing for the Phillies and Padres after signing $300 million contracts. And why did they sign them when these teams were not still good? Because one day, especially when they were, 27, right? When they signed these deals, 27, 28. Because they're in their primes. They're some of the best players on earth. And when you get to this moment and you need these dudes and you need players that can show up and carry you for a postseason round, even in baseball, that can happen. That's why you do it. That's why I pay them the big bucks. And it is so freaking cool to see them playing against each other. And again, back to our first point of this podcast, the fact that we're going to get to see Bryce Harper or Manny Machado in the World Series. I know we've seen Machado in the World Series under very different circumstances, but this is his team. And it is very cool that he has a chance to do it.
Mike Trout has warped our understanding of what a hyped prospect is supposed to be. Mike Trout has been a generationally, bizarrely good baseball player the entire time. Machado and Harper, because they came up in the same general time, have the number one thing people would say about them is they're not as good as Trout, which is true. They have not been as good as Trout. No one has ever been as good as Trout this level into a career, basically.
Yeah.
Right.
Unless, sorry, if like Mel Ott's grandkids are listening and saying, I don't know, you take a look at those numbers. He was pretty close. But other than that, you're right.
Shouts out to the Hot Ott gang. But generally, Harper and Machado have just been exactly what they were supposed to be. And they got a lot of criticism along the way. People critiqued their style of play. They said they were too flashy, too energetic. They couldn't lead a team. Why are they going to these random cities in free agency? It's a lot of money. Are they worth the money? Yeah. Yes, both of them are. And I think it's interesting to see them pick these places where they could kind of be the guy, mm-hmm. right? They could have gone to a team where there were a lot of other star players. And I know that Soto and Tatis kind of are now on the Padres. But they went to these places and they helped build these rosters in a way where, you know, in free agency, the Phillies could go to a guy and be like, hey, look, Bryce Harper's here. We're trying to do this.
And also, right? Once you get these guys, there's no turning back, right? It's like, oh, well, if we're going to be paying this dude $30 million a year for the next decade, we might as well try and win, right? I mean, that's part of it too, but also your point. Also, just quickly comparing to Trout, right? Like, Trout came up so fast and was so good that there wasn't even hype or expectations. He just appeared and was the best player in the league. Whereas Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, since they were 15, everyone's been telling them, hey, you're going to be one of the best baseball players in the world. And that's not easy. That's not an easy thing to deal with. And they've just done it. And sure, they've had some moments along the way where people have not liked them. But as far as we're concerned, there have been very few. Manny's had his moments. But as far as we're concerned, it's been a pretty impressive track record of just on the field excellence, and to the point where it's just like, damn, they handled it and they've delivered. And the fact that they're just now 30 and are still in their prime is amazing. And we're lucky that we've been able to watch them for so long and get to keep watching them.
All right, let's talk about two other generational talents, Austin and Aaron Nola, who are from generally from Nola-ish, right? Aren't they from Louisiana?
They are from Louisiana and from Baton Rouge. So not quite
Nola.
Not quite Nola, but closer than most other cities. And the look, baseball brothers in general is an amazing thing. Major League brothers, of course. But the contrast here is remarkable. For those who don't, honestly, I'm realizing that the Austin Nola story has never really been told on this big of a stage. And maybe it was a little bit in the 2020 postseason, I realized. But man, this dude was a shortstop until like 4 years ago. He was a shortstop in college. He was never a big prospect, great defender, not that good of a hitter. And then he got to AAA with the Marlins and was like, how am I going to be able to stick around? How am I going to finally make the big leagues? My brother Aaron was a first round pick. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball, but I am going to work my ass off. I'm going to be a big leaguer. He's like, I'm just going to start catching, which is an insane thing to do in AAA for the first time. And to have the coaches and support to be like, yeah, you can do it, right? So credit to the Marlins for letting him do that. He ends up with the Mariners. They turn him into a great big leaguer. They trade him for a bunch of good players. With the Padres, he's been relatively disappointing for the haul that they gave up to him, but he has been excellent this postseason, both behind the plate and at the plate, most impressively, batting, you know, seventh, eighth, or ninth. And that's really changed the dynamic of this offense in a lot of these games. And, you know, I've seen it. You know, he was doing it with the Mariners for that little stretch there. He can be a good hitter, even if the numbers haven't shown. But it's a really fun matchup, and his development story is unlike many others.
And I love the contrast between the two Nola brothers, right? You have Aaron, who at LSU is the stud Friday night pitcher who goes, I believe, seventh overall, top prospect in the big leagues in a blink of an eye, frontlining a rotation before you know what's going on. Whereas Austin is grinding, forgettable. It's like, oh, that's Aaron Nola's brother the whole time. Shortstop. Oh, that's cute. Aaron Nola has a brother in AAA. And he just made himself into a big league catcher. And because of that, I don't know if Aaron Nola has ever pitched a bullpen to Austin Nola.
I mean, probably in the offseason, right? But it is a good question. It is not right. It's not like they were a battery at LSU. And I want to do some quick LSU trivia here in a second. But yeah, it is so cool. And just how Nola's become the player that he is and just how he's playing right now is just makes it all the better. And also there was a great quote from his mom, from their mom. It was just like, it's not that they're playing together. It's that one of them's going to the World Series, right? Everything we just said earlier. And that's got to be pretty surreal for them. So that's very cool. Quickly, this was pointed out by Michael Bauman. They only overlapped for, I believe, one season, actually, because Austin's a little bit older. Do you know what their season was that they last played together and what happened then?
Oh, yes. It would have been 2011.
2012.
2012, and it was when they lost to Stony Brook at home.
Other big leaguers on that team include Kevin Gausman, of course. Duh.
DJ LeMahieu?
Not DJ LeMahieu. I'm just talking 2012, so maybe 2011. But we got Jacoby Jones. He'll be watching somewhere, I'm sure. Nick Goody, Nick Rumbelow.
Oh, yeah, Nick Rumbelow.
And Ryan Eads, who you probably don't remember. But there you go, a bunch of big leaguers on that team. I'm sure Jacoby Jones will be cheering on the Nola Bros. All right, other things to think about in this series.
Next storyline. Yeah. All right, both of these teams acted like they won the World Series after the NLDS. We talked about this a little bit. But it was amazing. Because if the Braves or Dodgers had won those series, they would not have gone as hard. And I mean hard in terms of like throwing back some alcoholic beverages and Will Myers going to bars in San Diego and buying shots for everybody. This is like what Eric Hosmer did after the Royals won the World Series. And Myers is doing this after they won a 5-game set, right? Which is amazing.
Again,
We're
not making fun of them. It's just that it is an unusual, like it's just not something we've really seen. And so we love it, but it is funny. And now you have to win two more rounds.
And talking to guys in the Phillies yesterday at the workout, I was like, you guys basically treated it like you won the World Series. And they were like, yeah, you really don't know. Like, you want to believe in your team, obviously, right? But you take the moment as it comes and you feel how you feel in the moment and don't hide your emotions. And the Phillies had been waiting for this for a long time. And they went out to like Xfinity Live or whatever in Philly. And they were like hanging out with everyone. It really does feel in some ways like this is all gravy now for both of these teams. If either of these teams, they get swept, it's a good year.
Yeah. Right? And that goes to the other thing that I'm really thinking about a lot is if they're both playing with house money, then who's playing more loose, whatever. But then it just goes back to how the series before went, which is that the Phillies, not that they didn't earn it, they played great baseball, right? They didn't have to sweat it out. They were not necessarily playing and winning close postseason games the way that the Padres proved that they did. Now, maybe the Phillies will just stay hot and blow them out four times and they won't, they'll just steamroll all the way. Maybe that'll happen. But as far as this is why I'm leaning San Diego here, is just that they have been already put in situations where it's like, oh man, we got to sweat this out. We got to come back. We got to hang on to a close lead. Phillies haven't had to do that yet. And while I think that talent-wise, it's a pretty evenly matchup, as far as how they've gotten here and what they've been able to go through, this is why I kind of lead San Diego. But it'll be really interesting because I guess you could both be playing with house money, but it does create an interesting dynamic.
I also trust the Padres bullpen with a one-run lead way more than I trust the Phillies bullpen with a one-run lead, and I think that plays into the dynamic there as well. Mm-hmm. All right, Jordan. There was no off day between game 5 and game 6 of this series, which is funnier now because one of those games is in Philly and the other is in San Diego. Those are very hard cities to get between. There, I believe, are only 3 direct flights a day between those two cities. So most of the media won't get to the press conferences for game 6. It'll be very bizarre.
There are definitely going to be people not getting to that game in time. It's going to be a real test of who's got their best travel points and pull with their respective airlines because it is going to be quite the challenge to return. Now, maybe the series doesn't get back, right? It's possible too. But in the scenario that it does go back to San Diego for game 6, you will see some reporters tweeting about their travel. And honestly, possibly the team as well, depending on, weather in Philadelphia. Very possible, right? So this is a very strange dynamic that is if we get to that point, will very much be a discussion point.
And to be clear, it is a lockout thing. Mm-hmm. Because of the delay to the season, they're condensing it on the back end because they don't want it to like pour over into November too far. I don't really know
why. It already is. but yes, they're not trying to go too deep into November. And so they've decided to both add some random off days and then eliminate some off days in these postseason rounds. So yeah, we will certainly talk about that if it gets that far in more detail as the series progresses. Anything else you're thinking about for this series?
Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yeah, this is really the last thing we should mention.
If I told you, Jordan Schusterman, a year ago that the San Diego father figures would be in the NLCS, you'd be like, wow, Tatis must have just had a day. Had a year. And he did have a year.
He certainly had a year. A year was had by him.
Fernando fell off a motorcycle and wanted to come back. And so he did some drugs. And then he got popped. Then he lied about it. And now he's not here. That is what happened. His status within the Padres clubhouse is better than it was, but is still tenuous and somewhat fraught. He's not exactly the most beloved guy in there right now, understandably, because he was a dummy and jeopardized their season significantly. And the team feels like they've won without him. And why do we need to talk about him? He's not on this team. Like, he is, when you think about a team, right? It's the people who have spent all year together. And then it changes a little bit every year. Every team is different. And Fernando Tatis Jr. is just not on this team. He hasn't been on this team. They don't think of him as being on the team. And I think that is a significant reason why his absence isn't as felt as obviously as you might expect, because Kim has just been the shortstop for the 2022 San Diego Padres. They didn't, it's not like they had Tatis and then lost him. He has not been here. He has not been around, right? He has not been a presence. And so his absence speaks volumes, obviously, because the greater baseball world and sports world expected him to be here for this moment. And it's weird that he's not here. But I just want to emphasize that the energy, I think, around the team itself is more just like, okay, like, yeah, he's not here. He was never here.
And Darnay Tripp, who's one of the great San Diego reporters who we've followed for a while, he tweeted out that Bob Melvin said that he texts with Fernando about every other day and said he's very supportive of the team during his postseason run. The real question is, like, where is he? They talked a lot about how he is going to spend most of it more in San Diego than in the Dominican, which, based on his track record, is probably for the best. He just had another surgery, a wrist surgery, to fully repair the motorcycle situation, in addition to the shoulder surgery he had recently. So he's just going through a lot of rehab. Will we see him at any of these games if they get to the World Series? I doubt it. Certainly not during the game. But it is a very interesting dynamic. But to your point, he's not on the team. I don't think he's getting a ring if they win. I really don't.
He would be a distraction. I don't think he'll come. I think he knows that he shouldn't be there. I think they would tell him, hey, don't come. I would imagine he's in the DR right now, and we'll just hop back to San Diego once the season is over. But it is just a bizarre situation. The last very thing strange. I want to bring up, Jordan, is that this stadium, Petco Park, it's named after a pet store. And we as a baseball community have overlooked that for too long. Okay? Why don't we call this the dog house?
Why don't we? It sounds like we have time to make that a thing. That's a great point. Well, there's, you know, you get, I will say, as a pet owner of a cat, I don't think I've ever been to Petco. I don't even know what the nearest Petco is to me in Indiana. It does exist, but it's one of those things too where it's like, wow, it's a pet store that's big enough to own the naming rights to a Major League Baseball stadium. So it's great, but it's great. I love the alliteration, and we're just used to it. It's like, yeah, Petco, going out of Petco. Baseball's weird. All right, let's do our picks. Let's say goodbye. We've gone longer than we planned. Jake, who's going to win the 2022 National League Championship Series, and in how many games? Who's going to the World Series?
Phillies in six.
I'm going to go Padres in six. And goes back, man, going back to San Diego. That is really going to be something. I'm very much looking forward to how the series turns out. We will hopefully be back with an ALCS preview pod in the next 24 hours or so. I know it'll be a little bit crammed, but so will the actual ALCS. So we will deal with that when we get there. But until then, thank you for listening. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com, BARBcast. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing, as always. Any final words, Jake, from your San Diego hotel room?
Thank you to all the people who emailed us letting us know who was going to start game 3 of the NLDS.
From the future. We appreciate it. Kate, email us who's starting game 4 from the future. We'll probably pop before then, but just let us know. We'd really appreciate that. All right. Thanks. Talk to you soon. Bye.
SiriusXM Podcasts.